Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Monday, May 10th, 2021. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And as always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great benefit for over 16 years to improve the quality of my life and relationships, manage my emotions, and turn any negative emotion into a part of the infallible guidance system that each of us are given. You can also download the actual tool itself. It's a simple PDF file that you click and download and copy it and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the worksheet process or they've called in to give powerful testimonials about how the application of the process in their lives is yielding positive results. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. You tap on that, it'll let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to questions. And that's why we're here 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. Not just 1 hour a day, but 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. And if you call, our number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it will put a little question mark by your phone number, and I will announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. We are also doing the Course in Miracles lessons this year through the workbook of Course in Miracles, and today is the 130th day of the year, but I'd like to back up just briefly and read the lesson for Saturday, read, The World I See Holds Nothing I Want. And reading just the first paragraph in that commentary clarifies a little bit. The world you see with your eyes showing you pictures in your brain holds nothing that you need, nothing that you can use in any way, nor anything at all that serves to give you joy. If you but believe this thought, You are saved from years of misery and countless disappointments, and from hopes that turn to bitter ashes of despair. So that was Saturday's lesson, and yesterday's lesson reads, beyond this world, there is a world I want. The commentary in the first paragraph says, this is the thought that follows from the one we practiced yesterday. You cannot stop with the idea the world is worthless, for unless you see that there is something else to hope for, you will only be depressed. Our emphasis is not on giving up the world, but on exchanging it for what is far more satisfying, filled with joy, and capable of offering you peace. So, with those two statements in mind, today's lesson reads simply, it is impossible to see two worlds. Perception is consistent. What you see reflects your thinking, and your thinking but reflects your choice of what you want to see. Your values are determiners of this. For what you value, you must want to see, believing what you see is really there. No one can see a world his mind has not accorded value, and no one can fail to look upon what he believes he wants. Yet, who can really hate and love at the same time? Who can desire what he does not want to have reality? And who can choose to see a world of which he is afraid? Fear must make blind, for this is its weapon. That which you fear to see, you cannot see. Love and perception thus go hand in hand, but fear obscures in darkness what is there. What then can fear project upon the world? What can be seen in darkness that is real? Truth is eclipsed in our minds by fear, and what remains is but the imagined. Yet what can be real in blind imaginings of panic that are born of panic? What would you want that is shown to you? What would you wish to keep in such a dream where panic blinds us? Fear has made everything that you think you see, all the separation, all the distinctions, and the multitude of differences you believe make up the world, they are not in truth there. The enemy to love has made them up. And yet love can have no enemy, and so they have no cause, no being, and no consequence. They can be valued and therefore appear in our perception, but they remain unreal. They can be sought, but they can never be found. Today we will not seek for them, and nor waste this day in seeking what cannot be found. So, accept a little part of hell as real, and you have damned your eyes and cursed your sight. And what you will behold is hell indeed. Yet, the release of heaven still remains within your range of choice to take the place of everything that hell would show you. All you need say to any part of hell, whatever form it takes, is simply this. It is impossible to see two worlds. I seek my freedom and deliverance, and this is not part of what I want. So, when we hold a value in our minds, our perception will change according to what we hold that we value. If we hold all of the lies that fear has given us, we will see those things to fear. Pam Grout's book, Course in Miracles Experiment, Lesson 137, titled Be Recklessly Generous and Relentlessly Kind. She quotes Cheryl Strayed, who said, "All right is almost always where we eventually land, even if we screw up entirely along the way." Pam writes, "When a quarter lands on the floor, I either get heads or tails. I can't have it both ways." A Course in Miracles Lesson 130 reads, "It is impossible to see two worlds, and therefore this Course in Miracles lesson asks me to decide. Letting the divine buzz handle the details doesn't mean sitting around polishing my nails and refusing to pick up the phone when, say, oh, let's say Oprah calls. It means a rigorous practice of connecting with the big guy and asking it to line up my schedule, allowing me to make sure that I meet the folks and make the connections that best align with my mission. It involves invoking love. Love, expansion, and joy. I devoted my life to the divine buzz many years ago. I appointed it the CEO of my career, and so far it hasn't let me down. It's enabled me to write 20 books and create a life without a, quote, real job, close quotes, for more than 30 years. It has enabled me to make a living on my wit and my craft. The only thing keeping anyone apart from this power is their own walls and judgment. Judgment, I'm relieved to find out, is not my function. My only job is to choose the divine side of the coin." So choose love, choose love, choose love, and see the false that fear represents for what it truly is. So that's our Course in Miracles lesson and commentary for today. And area code 910, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hey, Dr. Tim, it's Jill from Wilmington.
Well, lo and behold, welcome, Jill. It has been a long time since I've heard that voice.
I know. It has been. I've been here on and off when COVID shut everything down and my son was out of school. It threw off everything for me for quite some time, but I'm still here.
Well, welcome.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, what's on your mind today?
Well, I called because I have, when I call, it's always, you know, not something small. At least it feels big to me. So I have realized that I, in my energy field lately, has been full of hate, a lot of hate and rage. And it wasn't until just a few days ago that I remembered that this is actually an opportunity for healing. I was holding on to it. I was very invested in my story being true. So I did a few wake-up sheets. And what I'm calling about is I need help. I'm not even sure what my question is. I can definitely tell, like, my brain feels a little scrambled. I'm in that confusion place. So that's the situation.
Okay.
I'm trying to
so
keep it simple
does,
for you right now.
Does the fact that you're calling indicate that there is at least some part of you that's willing to look at the excruciating pain that underlies that hate?
Yes.
Take a breath. So is this a new thought about hate? Is this an old target for hate? Where does this lie in your experience?
I think it's a newish target, but it's old hate. I realize that the man that I'm dating, I am projecting every terrible quality that I believe about men onto him. that's basically it, you know, and I recognize, too, that in affiliation, you know, what I want to do in response is to do everything to him that I think he's doing to me. So it's a merry-go-round of hatefulness that I'm stuck in. And I haven't been able to see him for who he is. I've been really believing that he's just a terrible person. And yes, it's every negative thing that I believe about men. Maybe not every, but a lot of them.
So, like eventually they're going to leave you?
Yes, that's part of it. You want me to tell you what I think? You want me to give you the list? Yes, that basically, like, lazy, worthless, unreliable, takes me for granted, ignoring, rude, what else?
Well, if even one or two of those things are actually true, what's keeping you in the relationship or in the pattern of interaction that some would call a relationship?
Yeah, and actually, I was to the point of, like, you know, telling him, you know, just being like, I'm out, I'm done. But I don't think these are true. I don't think they're true at all. You know, I mean, everybody's careless sometimes, everybody's rude sometimes, but I don't think that he is this horrible, hateful person. I feel confused about it because I haven't been able to discern, you know, is he someone that I should pursue a relationship with and or not? Like, do I cut and run? And I can't tell. And I think, you know, I can take this back. I feel a lot of these feelings I've felt towards my father, you know, sort of contemptible, like, you know, just not worth a damn. Like, don't even bother going to this person for help or assistance. Like, just, you know, these are thoughts I have about my dad. You know, he's kind of helpless and incapable and those types of things. And
well, and so part of the, you know, the questioning has to be, so is this the way that this person appeared to you when you began dating?
No.
So was there a one event trigger switching this? Or have there been a whole series of events?
I might say there was one recent thing that really kind of triggered this cascade, and it was a minor thing. But I would say, too, like, there are some larger sort of forces at work. So the trigger happened where it just seemed to me that it became clear that, let me say the force that's at work is we live in different states. And if this is going to be a sustainable relationship, I would be the one to relocate. And so I'm freaked out about that. And I am looking for some guarantees that may or may not be possible. And one of them is I want to feel confident that this is a partnership, that it's an us relationship, that it's not a him doing his thing and a me doing my thing. And of course I have a child, so, you know, that's an extra responsibility that I have. And something happened where it just seemed to illuminate that he is not thinking about us, that it's, you know, when it comes down to it, he's going to do his thing, and here's another issue. This is a Hydra thing. I'm, quote, stuck because I have the responsibility of a child, and I don't have a co-parent. I'm not free sometimes to just be an adult and do adulting things. Like, I always have my son to think about. And, you know, in some ways I feel like this is burdensome, and who would want that? And so I also have resentment.
Hold on. Right there. Nice deep breath and a slow exhale. What just happened with all of that intense emotion around the phrase, this is burdensome and who would want that?
Yeah, I had a lot of emotion. I think it's because I sometimes feel burdened by parenting. And, you know, the language that I use, like, I can't ever get away, like, you know, and this, I'm never free. I'm never free of that responsibility. And, you know, there's part of me that feels really jealous that he also has a child, but he has a co-parent, and so he's like, I say this. I call him a part-time dad. And what I want and what I'm looking for, and I want, you know, this is what I'm in need in order to have a partnership, is a full-time dad for my child. And it's, and I mean not necessarily dad, but like full-time adult male figure. But yes, I have this view, and it just reminded me when my parents got divorced, my dad basically, in my view, took off. And my interpretation of that is dads don't want to be dads. You know, kids are a burden. And, you know, he went on trips.
Okay, so that's worth a whole slew of worksheets. So I got this intuitive hit, emotional hit, when you said the burden, that you feel like you're a burden.
Yeah.
And that you were a burden to your dad, and that's why he left or took off. And that your concern is, or the energies in you, that some of that deep pain that might be generating the hatred is this fear and resentment that someone would see you as a burden.
Mm-hmm.
And if that gets replicated in your life today, it will probably resonate and echo old pains from when you were a child and your parents divorced and your dad basically took off, in your opinion. How old were you when that happened?
I was like early high school, like freshman or sophomore.
So some worksheets around that set of thoughts, you know, use the emotion that resonated so strongly when you used the word burden. And you can do it because if you're feeling like parenthood is a burden to you, you can do it from the perspective of feeling as though parenthood was a burden to your father, that you were a burden because you were dependent when you were young. And the worksheets on how, if there's any interaction between you and your current boyfriend, man friend, that resonates in you that thought of He doesn't want to commit. He doesn't want to be a full-time father. He sees me as a burden, or he sees my son as a burden, that's going to stir up all the old pain from every time you have felt that someone abandoned you or you were a burden and that's why they abandoned you. And that would probably be the unspeakable pain that your hatred is there to cover up or to numb you out from.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I mean, the situation that I'm looking at right now, I do feel like I would be a burden to my man friend because I'd be relocating to a place where he would be my main resource until I get settled. And that's terrifying. And yes, his tendency to, you know, want to go and do, oh, well, if I can't find someone to watch my son, then I'm just going to go off and do this fun activity anyway. And you're shit out of luck, basically. It sucks to be you because you have a kid and, you know, you're not going to just dump your kid off on any babysitter or whatever. That's kind of how I feel about it.
So take a breath and notice how you went right into all of the intellectual stuff and left all the emotions.
I know. They went away. Well, and I tell the story, too, because then I can be mad at him. You know, I can be angry. There goes the anger again.
Right. And as we know in this work, my anger is my drug.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a drug that's numbing me out to pain and or fear. And there is no amount of my exercising my anger, which is going to lead to any kind of a loving solution in my life or productive solution in my life.
Yeah.
So, a mind shifter might be useful. I don't know how much you've used that tool in the past.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You find those. I'm hesitant to give this one. Dr. Kim should do some worksheets on this. Okay, hesitant to give this worksheet or this mind shifter. So it's safe and healing for me, and I love it when my very existence feels like a burden to those around me. What's your first hit with that?
It's not pretty, but I will say that, well, the day after Mother's Day and all, being a mother and having a child has been a huge burden for me. That's the first thing that pops up that I see.
Right.
When I'm treating my own child the way I think I've been treated.
Exactly. Exactly. And so the work that you do, whatever level of work that you're able and willing to do on this, is going to be of tremendous benefit for the whole bloodline, but beginning with you and your son. And being honest about that feeling while at the same time understanding that it's a product of wounds, woundedness, and pain is what's needed to begin the healing. So I can't in my mind be harboring thoughts that I'm a burden or my son is a burden or parenting is a burden I don't want, and then put on a smiley face and pretend that I'm the best parent ever and I love being a parent. But I can't be harboring those other thoughts and energies and pretend them away. Mm-hmm. I have to be able to be honest about them, give them voice, and be willing to work on them. And the more I dismantle this sense that I'm a burden, my son is a burden, relationships are a burden, parenting is a burden, the more I dismantle that, the more I open up the possibilities for an expansive, loving life. But the more that sits there and I try to either pretend it's not there or I'm unaware of it, every time it gets resonated, it's going to drive my experience and my behaviors. So do you have an initial, you know, one of the earliest memories of feeling as though you were a burden to your parents?
I would have to I'll think about that for a minute. I can remember I was probably like kindergarten age, and for whatever reason, I just wanted to stay home with my mom, and she, you know, was not having it. She was mad, yelled, of course, then I was like, never mind, I'll go to school. And then she was like, just stay home if you want to. And, of course, I was like, well, you don't want me to stay home, so I'm not staying home. Yes, I remember that feeling of just, I just didn't want to go to school. I just wanted to stay home. And I'm a little conflicted when I say this because now as a mom, I'm like, go to school. I need a minute. So I get it.
Right.
But,
right. So you might want to do the worksheet on yourself as the kindergarten person who wanted to stay home and do one or two of those with various emotions and thoughts, and then one as your mother who had the kindergarten child who, you know, wanted or needed whatever she might have wanted or needed, and just pretend and see what those worksheets reveal.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's some unraveling to be done in the thoughts that you're still holding about you being a burden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking about tone of voice, and again, I think I use this tone of voice a lot, kind of like an irritated tone, And not only do I use it, I hear it in my ears as my mom's tone of voice. And that communicates to me, what do you mean? It's like this irritated sort of, you're so annoying and dumb tone of voice. And I feel like I have that energy in me sometimes in my interactions with my child. And I hear my mom's, the sound of my mom's voice in my ear.
And what do you feel emotionally when you report that?
Terrible parent.
Well, that's a thought. What do you feel emotionally when you judge yourself as being a terrible parent? What do you feel emotionally? What emotion comes up for you?
Well, shame for that, and sad that I would speak to my kid that way. So ashamed of myself and sad.
So there's some worksheets there where the thought is, I'm a terrible parent. And that one thought can generate the emotion of shame, and another one, sadness. And you could probably get some good mileage out of those based on the emotion that's coming up when you talk about it.
I think it's what I feel too, is sort of grief, and I want to say I'm sad for myself as a little girl. She just sort of popped in, my little girl self.
Excellent. Follow that. And you can do those worksheets where your little girl self is sad, and you can come up with the various thoughts that would be generating sadness for her in the various situations that are popping up in your head right now. And worksheet by worksheet, as you're willing to go there and look at these thoughts about yourself as being a terrible parent and dismantle the shame and dismantle the sadness, it will start to shift the energy, the emotion, and then the perception. You know, this is what the Course in Miracles lesson for today is. If I value my sadness and I value my negative thoughts about myself, my perception will show me those things that generate all of those negative emotions. And when I choose to value wholeness and truth, you know, one of the truths that's stated over and over in the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery is you remain as your Creator created you to be. You're whole. Nothing of value can be taken from you. Nothing of value can be added unto you. And yeah, we can all make missteps as a parent, as a person. And yet it does not decrease our value as a person when we make a misstep. So if you choose the loving perception and you choose to value the loving ideas and behaviors, it will start to shift your perception. And if you're willing to do these worksheets, it'll do it even more rapidly.
Yes, I definitely heard my situation in those lessons that you read just a little bit ago. I was not able to see or value anything other than that hatefulness. You know, I was blinded by that. I was really deep in it. Thankfully, I have to say, I didn't act on it. I didn't act on it, though, because I wanted to, but I didn't, because there was some place that knew, like, this is not true.
Well, and this is one of the things that we count as the core of this work, and the core of this work is the urgency for me to refuse to buy into the negative, to see it as it is, to own it, and then use the tools to dismantle it. And the sooner I can catch that I've gone to a hateful thought, or a bitter, or a sad, or a hurtful, or a shameful thought, the sooner I can catch that and apply the tools, the better. And you know, the bottom line observation number 10 that says, if I have a negative thought about myself or somebody else, or a negative emotion running in my mind, I can instantly know these three things. The first one is, this is a lie or based in a falsehood. The next thing is, this is not about the current situation. This is an old tape playing in my mind. And the third thing I can know is, if I take an action from this negative thought or negative emotion, it can only always and forever make my current situation worse. It can't make it better. So the sooner I can become aware of that negative pattern and choose to pick up the tools or to challenge the negative thought and see it as false, the better my life gets. Because, you know, if you're like most of us, you've got a lot of years of that habit of thought, you know, burrowing, you might say, tracks in your mind, the neural pathways of that practice thought. And so I may have to catch it dozens and dozens of times and stop it and correct it and apply the worksheet or some other tool that's effective before I can reprogram that neural pathway to something more loving and respectful and productive. But the key begins with recognizing that if it's negative, it's false.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot be based in the truth. The truth of what? Well, the truth of your life. The truth that, as the Course in Miracles and Way of Mastery tell us over and over again, you remain as your Creator created you to be. It can't be anything else. Just as your son remains as he was created to be. And he's either, he and you and all of us, we are either acting from the realization of that true loving nature, or our actions are creating a cry for help and healing.
Mm.
And the sooner we can step into that pattern of the recognition of the false, as the negative as false, and then challenge it and or engage the tools, the better our lives get, the quicker. The fact of the matter is, you were never a burden as a child. You were a blessing. The fact of the matter is, you, like the rest of us, were born into this human condition with all of these patterns of error in thought and error in experience of separation without challenging it. And so we had parents who at various levels were either able to see our true nature as a blessing and a gift, and those who were not. But whatever my parents did was about them. However they chose to respond to their experience of being a parent was about their strengths and gifts and woundedness, not my value as a person. And so it's essential for you to continue to remind yourself of that truth so that you can start to dismantle the false beliefs that you've downloaded, that there was something wrong with you, that you were really a burden as a child, and that's why your father did what he did and your mother treated you the way she did.
Mm-hmm.
Because whatever comes out of somebody's mouth is always only and forever going to tell you more about them and what's going on inside of them than it's ever going to tell you about the person they're talking to or about.
So I get that on like the intellectual level, totally makes sense, but the trick is to unravel the perception, you know, the filter that those actions went through that landed for me as burden. And also, I'm thinking about, you know, today even, I am aware now after doing these worksheets that I am ignoring all sorts of evidence that would contradict my beliefs. And I could even talk about, like, my beliefs in, you know, men not being trustworthy or something. I have plenty of examples of trustworthy men around me. But I pick and choose the ones that reinforce, you know, like men are shit, or they will leave, or whatever. And I'm just saying that as I notice that I do that. And I guess the wake-up sheets, you know, this process is the trick to getting underneath those perceptions. If that makes any sense. I'm not sure it does.
Well, and it might, but the essence that I would draw you back into is just this really simple process of, if I have a negative thought or a negative emotion, that means something from my past has been activated. This is an old tape playing. And whatever my mind starts showing me when those filters are active, are those images in my mind are not accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be that I'm in a relationship with somebody who isn't trustworthy, who doesn't really value me, who isn't going to be in this for me and my son. It might be that that's the case. But if I'm feeling that with rage, I'm not seeing it accurately. And it might be that the best thing for me to do is to end this pattern of interaction that, you know, I'm thinking of it as a relationship, but the other person isn't really engaged in it as a relationship. For him, it's a part-time activity. And so it might be that the thing for me to do is to get out of that pattern. But if I get out of it because of rage, then, number one, I'm not seeing clearly, and I might be leaving a relationship that has the potential to bring health and healing. And number two, I'm going to just leave that and jump into another one.
Yep.
Or isolate myself from the possibility of a healthy relationship and, you know, create that misery of yearning for some healthy relationship and never allowing it to unfold in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's all true. And that's exactly where my confusion is. And I'm not clear. I don't know.
The only way to get clear is to dismantle the hate. And that would mean dismantling the pain that's underneath it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the word burden is very primary. I think that's where I would start.
Yeah, and whether you go with that mind shifter or you go with the worksheets that have I am a burden or my son is a burden as the thought in the worksheet, and then the corollary emotions that go with it and the corollary goals. So take a breath and scan your body and let me know what you're feeling right now.
Well, I feel a ton different than I did when I called. I was absolutely very disoriented, feeling like my like a lot of brain fog, felt actually exhausted, like I needed a nap immediately. Almost dizzy with just confusion. And I don't feel that way at this moment. I don't feel super clear on how this is all going to go, but I also, a lot of that confusion has sort of moved away, which is helpful. Feels a lot better.
Okay. And, you know, we began simply with the recognition that if I'm feeling anger or hatred, what that means is underneath it, within me, is pain or fear. And it's in, you know, fairly much direct proportion to the intensity of the anger is the intensity of the pain or fear I can expect to uncover. And it's safe to do that. This is, you know, there's a part of my mind that thinks it's not safe to look at that stuff. But the key is it is safe to look at that because I've already lived through it. There's no way it can hurt me to see it more clearly. As Guy Finley says, there is no such thing as bad self-knowledge. So for me to uncover and become consciously aware of the dynamics in me that are generating all of this pain or fear is completely safe, despite the part of my mind that's screaming at me, don't look at this, Tim. You can't survive this. This is too much.
Yeah. Yep, I think that's absolutely accurate. It explains, I mean, the feeling of hatefulness was very intense when I finally, like, it's sort of like I came to consciousness. I was like, my gosh, I am hateful, like just spewing it. And yeah, I was thinking, well, it must be equivalent to whatever it's covering up. So, I think the moment that I noticed how hateful I was feeling and acting might have also been the moment where, and, you know, picking up the tools, the moment where I cracked that door open a little bit, like it is okay to look at this stuff. And when I say that now, I have tears again.
So let the tears come and just keep the breath moving. It is okay to look at this stuff. It is safe. It will not be fun, but it is safe. And it is the only path that we know of that leads to actual healing.
Yes, I know that because I've done it. You know, I've been around here long enough to have experienced that healing. And also, you know, that hateful place is super painful. I would like to not be there anymore. And that's incentive to look at the underlying fear and pain, which is where I got to at the end of my second worksheet, is being grateful for the opportunity.
After only two worksheets, that's tremendous. Truly good.
Well, I think I was ready. You know, I have this sense of, you know, this stuff in my field, and it's like just ready to go. It's just been waiting for me to figure it out. Like, hello.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fact that you're calling is pretty significant. It's been a long time since we've heard your voice, though.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's funny. I did these on, I think it was Saturday, and I was like, why is it always on a weekend? I could hardly wait for Monday. and knowing that this is going to be a catalyst for whatever happens next, I think you might have said something about, it might have been in the second book you're reading, The Reflections on the Course in Miracles, you know, letting God, for lack of a better word, like, do his thing. Not, you know, I'm not polishing my nails. I did some work, but also there's this mystery that has to kick in. And that's why I love asking Ruka to come in. And, you know, I often just ask her to show me or to take what I don't need anymore. And I don't necessarily even need to know what it is or how it's working. But yes, I was for sure going to call because I know I need help, and this is going to open up some other things that I don't know what they are yet.
Well, I congratulate you on your willingness to do this work and for your perseverance, and I celebrate with you the fact that your entire bloodline is going to get the benefits of all of this work, beginning with you and your son. And I think it's magnificent that you're willing to do that on the heels of your Mother's Day experience. And
Well, thank you. And, of course, I'm sure it's all part of the plan. And it was just occurring to me that how comforting it is that on a Saturday I knew that I could call on Monday and that you would be here. So thank you for that.
Breathing with you, you are entirely welcome and far more deserving than you yet know, especially when the thoughts of you being a burden fill your mind. But you can dismantle those. They were implanted falsely a long time ago. And you are a blessing, and you are entirely welcome and deserving.
Thank you, Dr. Tim.
You're welcome. I will mute you so you can keep listening or as you wish, and then we'll do our transition. So, again, thank you so much for calling, Jill.
Thank you.
We have just a couple minutes left before the second hour begins with Michael and Jeannie. And I would just like to remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false, especially thoughts of being a burden. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Good conversation. Good work, Jill.
How was your Mother's Day?
Well, I stayed in and didn't go anywhere. I actually have got my voice back today. And Michael fixed dinner for me last night, and Dad. And so just kind of a quiet day. And just stayed in and continued to get better. So I am glad that passed. You know, in years back, when I had a coughing spell like that, it would sometimes last 9 or 10 weeks. And so for it to be gone in 3.5 days is phenomenal.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And happy Mother's Day, and have a great show.
Thanks. I appreciate that. You have a good rest of your day. So welcome, everybody, to Mindshifters Radio. This is the second hour. Today is Monday, May the 10th, 2021. And our calling number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about, Michael and I, over the weekend was, I mean, Friday I was ready to get some penicillin. I felt so bad, and it's like, need to get this under control. just, you know, kept breathing and using the Avacyn several times and just kind of taking it easy and using oregano oil. And last night I didn't cough near as much, and this morning my voice was back. And so it's like, to be on the other side of it in just 3.5 days is phenomenal. Keep in mind that a healing crisis, you know, we had been doing a lot of extra work and processing and breathing and moving to a higher vitality level. And so anytime we do that, then we have to expect that the next depth of issue is going to come forward, and to be committed enough to go through it. You know, when Michael got back home Friday night, and he was asking me if I still wanted the penicillin, and I was like, no. I said, I think I'm going to wait one more day, and just hanging in there, you know, and just listening to my intuition and just taking care of myself and staying focused on where I was going and that I was doing my work, and realizing that the energy of the asthma and the bronchial issues and everything that had gone in to the tissue and created symptoms, I was moving in the other direction. It was moving out, and symptoms looked the same. And being willing to stay with it and go through it is a big part. And so I'm very thankful to be on the other side. I still have just a little bit of hoarseness, a little bit of cough, but I am 99% better, and I am so thankful. And I'm not sure where Michael's at. He's not with us yet. Still making some changes on getting the website switched over to a different format. It will look basically the same. There'll be a few things that are different, and so I can't make notes or changes or anything on the site until it gets switched. So I am keeping notes for the different shows, and as soon as we get to the new website, then I'll get those notes posted up. However, the links still work, so if you click a listen or a download link for the radio shows in the archives, they will still work. And so please make the tools available. They are all the links and everything still works on the current site, and just put the tools to work in your life. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you are here with us to carry forward, enhance, and grow our understanding of first century Aramaic forgiveness and how that process works. It's just such a privilege to get to move that forward. And happy Mother's Day to everybody. We didn't get to talk to last week about Mother's Day. It was a story that I shared in the Sunday service at Unity of Birmingham yesterday. And I'm going to share that story today because it's such a sweet and powerful story about correcting the atrocities done to women in our society and mothers in particular. So for everyone who's chosen to be a mom, I'm just looking up that story right now.
I think it's in WhatsApp too.
Here we are. Just a Mom is called. Well, wait a minute. It's disappeared. What happened there? Excuse me for a second while I get to the root of what's going on here. For some reason.
I'm printing it off. I'll bring it in to you if you want to talk for just a minute.
Thank you. Sure. I'm up for that. So our work in this wondrous arena of forgiveness is about touching into and recognizing that hostility and fear have no place in human experience. And when we realize there's no place for it in human experience, then we start to wake up to what does have a place in human experience. I mean, truly human experience, not just the experience of a body that looks like it's human, but truly human experience is that of the true nature of humans, and that's love. And so this particular story sort of brings an edge to that. Thank you, Jeannie, for bringing it through to me. So this was written by a woman who was standing in line at an official government office one day, and here's what happened. I stood in line as a woman named Emily renewed her driver's license at the county clerk's office, and she was asked her occupation. She hesitated, uncertain how to classify herself. "What I mean is," explained the recorder, "you have a job. Pardon me, do you have a job, or are you just a question mark?" "Of course I have a job," snapped Emily, appearing a little embarrassed. "I'm a mom." "Well, we don't list mom as an occupation, but housewife covers the said title," the recorder offered emphatically. It sounded demeaning. I forgot all about Emily until one day I found myself in the same situation. This time in our own town hall. Was obviously a career woman, poised, efficient, and possessed of a high-sounding title like official interrogator or town registrar. "What's your occupation?" she probed. What made me say it, I do not know. The word simply popped out of my mouth. "I'm employed as a research director in the field of child development and human relations and an executive assistant to the CEO of my company." The clerk paused, ballpoint pen frozen in midair, and looked up as though she'd not heard correctly. I repeated the title of my chosen field slowly, emphasizing the most significant words. Then I stared with wonder as my pronouncement was written by hand, was proud to make my acquaintance. Written into the public record for all the world to see on the official questionnaire. My title. "Might I ask," she said with renewed interest, "just what you do in your field?" Coolly, with a new sense of pride at the realization of just how important my purpose in the world really is, I heard myself reply, "I have a continuing program of research," what mother doesn't, "in the laboratory and in the field." Normally, I would have said indoors and out. "I'm working for my master's, the whole blessed family, and already have 4 credits, all daughters, and handle all aspects of our company's business. My work is acknowledged as one of the most demanding in the humanities. Any mother care to disagree? And I often work 14 hours a day, 24 a day is more like it. The lives I touch alter the course of history, and my chosen career is more challenging than most run-of-the-mill jobs. The rewards are out of this world, much more than just money, prestige, power, or success." There was an increasing note of respect in the clerk's voice as she completed the form, stood up, and personally ushered me to the door. As I drove out of the driveway, buoyed up by how important my position is, I was greeted by, as I drove into our driveway at home, I was greeted by my lab assistants, ages 13, 7, and 3. Upstairs, I could hear our experimental model in the child development program, our new baby, testing out some new focal patterns. I had scored a beat on the bureaucracy, and the cloud of our culture that our culture has put on motherhood was erased forever. I had gone into the official records as someone more distinguished and indispensable to mankind as just a mom. Motherhood. What a glorious calling. Even when there's no title on the door. Grandmothers and grandfathers, recognize your importance as senior research associates in the field of child development and human relations. Great mothers, grandmothers, and great grandfathers, accept the dignity of your role as executive senior research associates. Aunts and uncles, take your place as associate research assistants. And dads, thanks for your part, your love and support for the most important grouping in the world, our family. I thought that was a really powerful acknowledgement of the women in our world that are often called just moms. There is no just before that word. It is one of the most awesome responsibilities and one of the most awesome gifts the world's ever been given. And so thank you, moms. Thank you to my mom. Jeannie, you are an awesome mom. That son of yours is just amazing. And so thank you for all that you've done, every one of you. And so that was our Mother's Day story from yesterday. And I hope it touches you in some way to expand your respect for the women in your life, whether they're moms yet or just moms to be in the future. And then I want to go to reading from Why Is This Happening to Me Again. We're on chapter 11. If you're following around along, we're on page 63. And we're talking about processing and going unconscious. And we've been processing with Richard and recognizing that, well, one, the word processing in this work represents the ability to hold love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up. You know, if you go back to, say, 2,000 years ago, that story of the Yeshua goes to the Garden of Gethsemane, and he takes three of his research assistants with him and asks them if they'll hold to the presence of active love. And you'll notice that within an hour, he senses a void, and he goes out and he says, "Can't you guys stay awake for even an hour?" In other words, they were going unconscious. So we're talking about this process, and Richard comes up with the idea of, I'm feeling a little lost. It's like I'm back where I started. I'm ready to jump whole hog into blame again, and I don't understand. How did I lose this level of insight? I don't have any idea what you mean when you suggest replace saying I'm sorry. So Richard had created what he called an apology, and it really is more of a put down when I say to myself or someone else, I am sorry, and then I follow it up with a focus on the error that I've made. We have an apology tool where instead of I'm sorry, if one is off base, we suggest you acknowledge that you've been off base and that you speak about what you're going to replace the off-base behavior with rather than focus in what you're off base about. So I apologize, and in the future, here's what I'm going to do. And so Richard is recognizing that, you know, early in our conversation, you know, we're up to page 63 in the book, and we've had a lot of conversation with Richard, and he's been grasping the principles, and all of a sudden he realizes that he's just lost it. It's like, you know, I'm ready to go back to blame, and I don't understand. A few minutes ago, I really grasped this. What's going on? And what has happened is, yes, he had an understanding, and he lost it when unconscious dynamics were resonated into activity in his mind. And I offered him, it's a natural stage with two belief systems vying for attention to waver in your clarity. You're doing fine on that count. The alternative to I'm sorry would sound something like, I apologize for taking out my hostility on you, Michael. In the future, if anger or resistance come up in me, I will breathe and work toward taking responsibility for my upset. Richard took a deep breath and released a long exhale. I commit myself to being more responsible, being responsible for my feelings and breathing instead of attacking. This is simple. Why didn't I think of it, says Richard. Practice. All of these tools are simple. It's just a matter of retraining our minds to think differently. In the Aramaic thought system, this issue was addressed by the statement that we would be transformed by the renewal of our minds. So the work of Yeshua, the work that we're doing here, is about cleaning up the contents of the mind that's based in unconscious material, that's based in some form of hostility, fear, or lie. And we're looking to bring correction to that. So that's kind of the core of the work that we're doing. And we are honored and delighted that you're here to be part of that conversation. Ms. Jean, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room? Hello, Jeannie. And I'm seeing a call come in from Magda. Jeannie, are you with us? We've got a technician here working with Jeannie's dad from our his medical service. And I assume Jeannie
is probably
here she is. I figured that.
I had just stepped downstairs to see if everything was cool and if they needed anything. So,
do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anybody out there in the chat room?
Just the way up the step. There are no hands up and no questions in the chat room. Hi, Bob. Good to see you from down under or over.
Welcome, young man. So if you're out there in listener land, we've got lots of time for conversation. We'd like to open that space to step into. How can we support you? What's on your mind?
I was sharing at the beginning while I was waiting for you to dial in about moving through a healing process and being willing to keep going and realize where you're going instead of getting lost in it. We just had a hand go up.
Oh, great. Let's say hello.
I believe it's Miss Susan, 610. You're on the air.
Hi, folks.
Hey there, young lady. What's happening?
Well,
sound like you're in the middle
happening.
Of something.
Yeah. Well, ever since we did that work a couple of weeks ago, it's been a very rocky ride. And I'll start right in the middle because my daughter and I had a discussion, and it's odd how our challenges are so similar. Well, it isn't odd, you know. She's in my bloodline. So
there
here we are talking, and she said, Mom, you know, I don't want to get all weird on you, but have you ever called your challenges your demons? And I said, not exactly, but that sounds good to me. I think I'll list them. So I listed a whole pile of demons, self-doubt, self-deprecation,
right.
You know, all those things. And she said, Well, I've been listing mine, too. It's funny that you should say that you've been listing yours. We had a second discussion. I said I listed them all, and then I was in the car by myself, and I I yelled out loud, in the name of Jesus Christ, Holy Mother and Ramakrishna, all of whom are holy, holy people in my life. Ruka, I could have added, but I didn't because these are from my ancient tradition and the traditions that use the word demon. I said,
right.
I command you to come out of me. And for a full day, I had a, it wasn't one of those completely, you know, those vision-like blessed days, but it was a day peaceful, free, enjoying my life so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then I proceeded to go to bed at 9:30, woke up at 12:15, and couldn't go back to sleep for the whole rest of the night, and there were many demons moving around.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to get up and come downstairs and put my hand in the avicen and do a worksheet. I only did one, but it was pretty heavy. And I'm thinking, okay, I have a demon of the fear of not getting enough sleep. And I uh-oh, we're having a cat fight. Hang on, my grandson's here with his cat. Wait, get in. Hang on, Michael. This could be an emergency.
Okay.
Hey. Now, somebody just went out, and if it's his cat, we're in trouble. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to lock a cat door, and then I'll be back.
Okay. We'll wait.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. So I'm in the middle of, and it feels, you know, when you miss a night's sleep, or when I do, I don't feel well. And it is
another level of stress, for sure.
Yeah, it is, and yet I discovered something thanks to Jeannie. She had said, she wrote me this wonderful letter, and she said, among many wonderful things, she said, you are strong. Well, this morning was a teaching day, and I thought, how am I ever going to teach? I have nothing in my back pocket. I have nothing. But I taught a really good class and felt great during it and felt pretty good afterwards and am not feeling anxious, but I'm just so curious. I tried to do a worksheet, and I just couldn't follow all the way through it. Kept getting stuck. I wish I had it in front of me, but I don't. Let's see. Anyway, is there anything that I've said so far that you could say something about without my even having a cohesive question for you?
Well, I think that in the ancient translations or the ancient thought system, they thought of someone who was functioning out of thought disorders as being demon-possessed. And to me, the word demon there would just be another word for a thought disorder, someone whose mind is focused on...
Yeah.
And so... can I ask for support? And if I'm in a state of willingness, can I receive it from those ancient ones that I respect and call on? Absolutely. And sooner or later, I'm probably going to have to deal with my thought disorders, my demons. And as they come up, layer by layer, piece by piece, I let loose of them and make a space for something to come through to me from the wholeness, from the power that runs the whole game, from that which I've probably, because of holding my breath and buying into thought disorders, I've cut myself off from. And I want to reopen my connection to that. Remember, we've defined life as the flow of love through a cell. And when I buy a thought disorder, I restrict the flow of love through a cell. I restrict my life force. And therefore, I don't have clear communication from that life force. It's blocked or interfered with by my thought disorders, which, you know, Paul kind of talks about that as we see as though through a glass. Darkly, we're not seeing the truth of, and we're not receiving communication accurately from the wholeness, the holiness. We're blocked from it. And the work is about undoing those blocks, clearing out those layers.
Mm.
Does that support? Does that fit with where you want to go?
Yeah, it does. I have a lot of garbage around this one because my first thought is this one is not accessible. This one is like cast in stone. We can't fix this. So that's pretty bad. Yeah.
Well, that's just the thought disorder, that this one's cast in stone and can't be fixed. Excuse me. There's nothing so tragic, terrible, demonic, horrible, horrific, you know, degraded. There's nothing that the active presence of love can't simply zap and dissolve, period. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's Adolf Hitler. If the active presence of love enters into that mind, any thought disorder that comes up is going to be dissolved. Now, there are those who want to control us, who feed us thought disorders, and then say, and you'll always be like that. And I think that's kind of like, somebody wants to pull your chain, and that's one of those thoughts, you know, there's this underlying, well, it doesn't matter what you do, you'll never make it. It doesn't matter what happens, you'll never be good enough. And that's the chain that the authority then pulls somebody back in, sucks somebody back into. And when that comes up, you want to breathe and recognize, so someone's just pulled my chain on this thought disorder, and you might be doing it to yourself. And I can forgive this. I can remove this and allow the light and the truth of my being to come through, even in the presence of that thought that was implanted, to try to keep me under total control of the darkness that someone else was functioning from.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Tim, I worked with Dr. Tim last week a little on the sleep issue, and he said you have a goal of getting a good night's sleep. So how about letting go of that goal? And I thought I had let go of it until last night when there was no way to get back to sleep. So the goal is still there, and there are a lot of beliefs that are sticking to it, too. One of them is you won't be able to sleep unless you knock yourself out with a sleeping pill.
And of course, if you knock yourself out with a sleeping pill, you've been knocked out. You're not sleeping. So that thought disorder is just a blatant lie.
Oh, boy.
You know, someone who's knocked out is knocked out, and that is not sleep. That's one of the disadvantages of those chemicals. Yes, they alter the brain so that it moves to unconsciousness. But is that sleep? You know, it's like, you know, to use an analogy in your field, in the field of music. So you have this harmonious, beautiful song that you put together, and all the instruments are playing together, and something goes awry with that, and somebody comes along and says, well, what we're going to do is hook all the wind instruments up to a tube that blows air in them. And we're going to, you know, set up this air to blow through something that pushes the keys on the piano. So now all of a sudden the horns are blowing, the flutes are going, the piano's playing, but is it music? I mean, all the instruments are playing. There's some mechanical something that we've hooked up to all of them, so they're going. But is it really music? No. It's not. And so is what happens on a pill sleep? No, it's not.
Wow,
it's,
I could take
old...
that 2 ways.
Huh? Go ahead.
The thought disorder that kicks in right then is, oh, okay, so there's just no hope. And the second thought disorder showed up, which has been there all along, is, you're in bad trouble if you don't get enough sleep. You are in serious trouble if you don't get enough sleep. So, okay,
well,
gotta look at those.
And the truth is, you're in serious trouble if you don't get enough sleep. That I would agree with that thought. So now, what's the other thought disorder that needs to be cleaned up? What needs to be removed? What is it, you know, is that thought based in fear? If so, then what I want to do is clean up the fear behind it. And as I clean up the fear behind it, the fear that interrupts my sleep will disappear and I'll naturally sleep.
Okay.
You know, the truth is, in order for the structure to function, you have to have a sufficient amount of sleep. The brain doesn't detox itself properly. The waste removal that needs to happen doesn't take place. And the regeneration that needs to take place doesn't happen without proper levels of sleep. Putting a pill in the body that doesn't allow the brain waves to happen that are actual sleep, well, a body appears unconscious isn't sleep. So what is the fear that I need to remove from my structure in order to return to the place where I can close my eyes, I can feel safe enough to let go of the sensor that feels like it needs to protect me, and I can just go into deep, restful, health-restoring brainwaves, which are not even mimicked by drugs.
Yeah, you know, Michael, I'm at a complete loss, so I don't know how to go from here. I don't know what those fears might be.
Okay. So the first place I would go would be to look at, you know, the idea that I need to have enough sleep, and I'd cancel my need to have enough sleep. I'd clear out until I can see what the underlying fear is, what's going on here. And so that would look like canceling my need to have the right brain waves, to have deep sleep, to have enough rest, and look at possibly be there in the way of fear. I mean, is the fear that, you know, I've worked with people in the past that the thing that prevented them from going into deep sleep was, gee, there were times when if they ever let their guard down, they were attacked and hurt. And so I can't sleep because if I sleep, I'm not safe. So it might be a need, you know, if that were, you know, I'm just using as an example, it might be to cancel my need to be safe and let that file on being safe open and clearing out the fear or the trauma that's there.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things come to mind. Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
These aren't new memories, but they pop right up. Two memories. One is being put to bed. My mom had five kids, and she got very tired, and so she would put us to bed at 7:30, even through age 11 and 12. 7:30 at night, my sister and I went into our room, and we stayed in there, and we often played nicely, sang each other songs, played old stories. It was a nice time. But we were there until the very, very early hour, you know, and we woke up very early because of that. And,
right.
Oh, my God, this is a new one. Okay. Yeah. I don't know how this is related, Michael, but There were days when we always woke up really early, but there was one particularly horrible day where we woke up early and it triggered my mom into a bad whipping. And we were playing with a little tea set. So we weren't fighting even. We were just making noise and waking her up. And
right.
She went ballistic and we got the riding crop. That's one memory. Another one is if I couldn't get to sleep at night, it was usually because my mom and dad were having a party and people were making a lot of noise, and I worried about not being able to sleep. So the worry was already there. So that isn't even the beginning of it somehow. But I'd go to the top of the stairs and I'd say, Mom, I can't sleep. There's too much noise. And she'd say, take an aspirin and go to sleep. You'll go to sleep. Take an aspirin and you'll go to sleep. So there's the pill. The pill shows up, the magic pill. And it always worked. It was probably his hypnosis or something. Power of suggestion.
It was her suggestion that, you know, an aspirin doesn't make people sleep. But
yeah.
If the authority can say something with sufficient impetus than auto-hypnosis.
And the other memory is maybe much more significant, is that she and my sister ran a ballet school. She was the organizer, the administrator, and pianist for it. She would cut out costumes for all the kids for the year-end recital and fit them to each kid. You can see how much stress that would be. Plus, she wasn't a pianist. She was a competent piano player, but she had to learn one year the entire Nutcracker, and it was an orchestral reduction, a piano score that basically is hardly playable on the piano. And
right.
She would practice. And as the day approached, one night there was a lot of noise. We were in bed, my sister and I, and there was a lot of noise, doors banging. I got up to see my mother and dad's bedroom door ajar, and my dad was trying to feed my mother some soup, but her head kept falling backwards. She wasn't conscious. And then he put the soup down, came out and said, "I'm calling the doctor." And it turned out she had taken an overdose of sleeping pills. It was, I thought, until very recently, that it was because she wanted to off herself. The word overdose and sleeping pills meant she didn't want to live. I'm not sure that's true. I think it's just she couldn't sleep, so she took pills. And
on top of pills,
on top of pills. And so I was 9, and my sister, the dancer, came in my room and sat by me, and she's an angel. She put her hand on my knee, and I was shaking so badly the bed rattled. I think I've told you this because this is not a new story between us, I don't think. But she patted my knee and she said, "It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right." But I just remember how that's just a piece of information about the importance of sleep. That's all it is, I guess. So that's all mixed up in there.
It also ties in with fear about sleep.
Yeah.
You just touched into some of the fear that needs to be processed around sleep. So how about a mind shifter?
Okay, but you did say it yourself. We do need enough sleep, and that's a scary thought.
True.
I want to hear we can get along no matter how much sleep.
Wait a minute. It's just a thought.
Okay.
There's no such thing as a scary thought. It's just a thought.
Yeah.
When I put fear behind it, it's projection to call it a scary thought. It's just a thought. But when I put fear around it and I project my fear into the thought, then now I think that instead of my mind being the source of the fear, the thought is the source of the fear. And now I make, because I've projected it, the fear unresolvable. Recognize that's just a place that you've put some fear. And it's time to forgive the fear and recognize the simple fact. You need enough sleep.
Yeah. Okay.
If I have fear about not getting enough sleep, then I'm going to tend to use that fear to keep myself from sleeping. But the fear is the problem.
Yeah.
That interrupts the sleep.
Okay.
So how about
a
mind shifter? Okay, go ahead.
Okay. When I talked to Dr. Tim, he referred to me to a little podcast about sleep, and I listened, and it was very good. It was about changing lifestyles and setting up your bedroom in the right way and not using electronics before bed and getting exercise. But she didn't mention older age, so I went online and read about older people and what happens to their sleep, and it turns out that we slow down our production of melatonin, the hormone, so that we naturally wake up at odd hours and have trouble sleeping in older age, and that is natural to older age. I still want the mind shifter, but I'm putting that in the mix, too.
Yeah. If there were such a thing as old age, I'd agree with you.
Now, Michael, what am I going to do with you?
Yes.
I'm 77. I'm old.
Throttle me.
I'm not putting out my hormones. Okay, let's say I'm 23 and I'm not putting out my hormones. Is that a belief? Maybe it's a belief. Okay.
Well, no, I can at 23 or 12 or 77 reduce hormone activity, but it doesn't have to do with time. If I can do it at 4 years of age or 12 or 27 or 77, it doesn't have to do with time. It's got to do with something else. And fear will do that. So I want to resolve my fear and supplement if you recognize the fact that there's reduced melatonin output, then supplement with melatonin.
Yeah, I've been doing that, but it
doesn't do that?
Take care of it. Yeah. It helped, but maybe I'm not taking the right amount. I've tried various amounts, but I haven't closed the door on that one. And I took it last night, but it didn't do anything.
Uh-huh.
But, okay. All right, I'm ready for a mind shifter.
Okay. It's easy and pleasant. Easy, safe, and pleasant for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy, safe, and pleasant for me.
Mm-hmm.
To close my eyes, breathe, and rest deeply.
But not necessarily sleep.
If you breathe and rest, you'll sleep. But that's
okay.
The first thing I put on the other side is, but not sleep. But I'd put that the first thing on the opposite side of the page.
Okay.
So why don't you work with that and see what comes up?
Okay.
And it sounds like, I don't know what your mom's issue was with sleep. Sounds like maybe it was stress related.
Yeah.
And so as you remember that stress is created by goals, and as you cancel goals, you get to drop
mm-hmm.
into the deeper levels of the mind and process through whatever the root of that stress is. You may find yourself just being rid of that and simply naturally dropping into sleep when it's time to do it. Remember, we did talk mm-hmm. once before, and you can look at some ancient literature around sleep, and you might be a person who functions on what they called, two, I think if I remember correctly, it was two sleeps. And that, it was not unusual for people to, maybe go to bed at 9 o'clock and sleep until 1 o'clock and then get up and do 2 or 3 hours work and then have a second sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So you might just
yeah.
offer yourself that option. And,
mm-hmm.
For me, if I find myself having a challenge with sleep, I simply breathe and I'm asleep in minutes.
I've tried that and I'm not good at that yet. Yeah.
Do you have, I'm thinking, do you have a copy of the Wellness Through Stillness CD?
Probably. I think I've got all of them. We've got a ton. And isn't that one of the ones that's being streamed now?
Actually, I don't know whether we've got that one streamed yet or not, but
I do not.
I don't. It's not complete yet, but it's something
okay.
we're working
wellness.
On. Wellness to Stillness is a meditation.
Okay.
It's a 20-minute meditation. If you had it,
it's a green
sure
cover
remember.
With a baby on the front. All right, I'll look. Yeah, and if not, I'll look on your website.
If not, just drop me a text and I'll get one in the mail to you.
Thank you so much.
It's a meditation that actually I've had many people who have had sleep challenges, and I'm talking over the last 30-some years, that have told me that when they put that meditation on, they never hear the end of it. And I've had dozens of people tell me that. And about, I don't even remember exactly how long ago, maybe 8 or 9 years ago, I was on the road traveling and I had a briefcase with me and I looked at, and I had never listened to the CD from the time I created it, but I had it with me and it's like, I need to listen to this and see what it is that people go to sleep with it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear the end of it. I didn't hear the end of it. I still haven't heard the end of it.
Well,
so.
I don't want to be the one to tell you the end of it, Michael.
Okay.
But, yeah, well, thanks. Thanks so much. This is great.
So why don't you work with that mind shifter, and you might add the word sleep in there. Work with it on rest, and then maybe add to it sleep.
All right. Okay. Okay. You know, I've got to get rid of the thought that this isn't to be helped. This is not. It's like tinnitus. The audio guys, the audiologist says, "Oh, tinnitus. Once you have it, there's no hope." And so I'm taking all these herbal things and they're not helping, possibly because I believe there's no hope, or possibly because they're no good,
well,
or whatever.
Yeah, if you buy into the thought disorder,
yeah,
then, of course, the thought disorder is going to rule. That's how the mind works.
Right. Well,
now, who was it that said, you know, believe you can or believe you can't, and you're right.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much, Michael. As always, you and Jeannie. Jeannie wrote me this letter that I'm going to keep among my treasures. Just very special.
And, Susan, one of the chapters in my book that I have not gotten complete yet is called Facing Your Demons.
Good. That'll come in handy. Get it out quickly, Jean.
I look at it that the thought that possesses a person and acts like the tormentor creates their own hell. So that is the demon.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something
outside
of us that possesses us, but the thought.
Oh, right. Oh, I totally understand that, and my daughter does too. But she has this whole other thing where she would go as far as to say the demon is a powerful thing, and whether it's in or out of us, we don't. She believes that it might be a force from outside, and I'm not going to think much about that because everything's all connected anyway, so it doesn't really matter. And if you want to say something to that, that's great.
There's no outside.
Yeah. Right. I just got a text from Bernie and a text from you. Thank you.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the telephone and the iPhone are all of a piece, and if something beeps, very easy to look at it.
Is Vernie on the show? We haven't heard her voice in a while. She needs to say hello.
She says, "Hi, Susan. I was just going to send this text about wellness CD, and Michael mentioned it. I go to sleep with it every night. If I wake up in the middle of the night, I just hit the play button. Actually, I have it on my iPad under my pillow." Yay! Thank you, Vernie.
Oh, cool. All right.
Yeah.
Well, we'll take care of that, Vernie. And Vernie, I've been planning to call you because we've been working on mastering for streaming service all of the Course in Miracles CDs or tapes, which you've had for years. And in particular, I'd asked Jeannie if she would master tape number 25 on Pyramid Prophecy, because that was one of your favorites. And I had the thought that I was going to just surprise you and send it to you. And it turned out that the side B on that wasn't so good and didn't come out really well. So you were on my list to call and see if your copy of that particular tape was maybe better than the one we have. So perhaps you could master it. So I will call you after the show if you've got the space to say hello and see if you've got a better master than the one we had. The one we had, there's been a problem with. We've been trying to get it. But I had the thought of, well, I'm going to surprise Vernie with that, send that one off to her as soon as we get it done. It was the first one I asked you need to do, and we ran into that problem. So, cool. Coincidence.
Or not.
Or not. Right, Jeannie, right. All right, so Miss Susan, any other thoughts for you, young lady?
No, thank you. That's really helpful. I'll do the mind shifter and I'll get the CD.
All right, young lady, we appreciate you. Blessings.
Thanks. Thanks, Michael. You too. Yeah,
all
bye.
Right. Bye-bye.
So we have 8 minutes. If someone presses one, you'll be first in line, and we've got time for a little conversation.
Our calling number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. We would love to hear your voice if you have anything on your mind that we can support you with. Oh, great. Let's say hello.
816, you're on the air.
How you doing?
We're rocking. How about you? Who are we talking to?
I'm doing
to?
Pretty good. I just had a quick question about my friend, and her name is Casherelle. And I was wondering, is she still doing, like, adult films? I was wondering if you knew that or...
I got your joke, and we're
off.
Not playing, so thank you. You know, I had the suspicion, and I heard the voice, and not responding to the question of where are you calling from, that we've got somebody who's going to play the nasty game. So we're just not interested in your games, okay? And every once in a while, I know you have to call in and see if you can stir up a little crap, but we don't want to play. So have a blessed day and take care of yourself. And beyond that, we've got about, 6 minutes left, Jeannie? Let's go for it. If you're out there in listener land, again, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, then you can call into the show. The call-in number is 563-999-3581. And when you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you push 1, that'll raise a hand in the control panel. Jeannie will know you want to talk. How can we support you?
So if there's no hand up, and there isn't, and no questions in the chat room, talk a little bit about what you and I were talking about the other day about moving to the next level and going through the healing process and the potential to fall into a different space.
Well, I'm actually working on developing that whole idea a little more. And so I don't want to go into depth in it at this point, but in essence, what Jeannie's referring to is something that I've just come to a new level of recognition, and that is that when you hit a new level of vitality, at that new level of vitality, you loosen up or stir up a new level of what needs to be healed. And there's a danger in hitting that new level of connectedness or new level of aliveness or new level of love. And that is that when it stirs things, the next level that needs to be healed, if we live in denial, if our pattern is to not take responsibility for what's moving in us, then that healing crisis, that energy that's being loosed, can become the foundation of perception and, you know, in the perceptual constructs of the mind. And if we're pointing it at somebody else, then we take our own thought disorders, we project them into our brain's image of someone else, and that becomes a trap. So each new level of peak experience, there's a danger. And the danger is that we get trapped in the healing crisis that follows and the perceptions that come from our denial and dissociation around what that new peak experience has loosed in us. And I'll, you know, be talking about that more sometime in the next week or so. I'm still working on an article and developing those ideas, so we'll go into more detail. Before too much time passes, And if you're not using the forgiveness process, and especially that caller that wanted to come in and start talking about, you know, I don't know where your mouth was going, but the indication is to some kind of filth, I'd invite you to go to our website. Our website's whyagain.org. And check out the forgiveness process. In the upper left-hand corner of the page, there's a link that says start here. And if you click that link, it'll walk you through everything you need to clean out all of the dirt from your mind. You know, hostility and fear, viciousness. You're going to talk about some woman and adult films. Like, you know, where do you live? Where does your mind actually live? And is it really enjoyable? Yeah, I see you can call in and you can create a disturbance here. But, like, what does that serve you? When the truth is, the being that you are is like every other being. And that is, you started out as the presence of love just like everybody else. What happened that you would call with that kind of a call and mention some woman's name? Like, what kind of respect do you have for women? And we're talking about moms earlier. Where do you really live? And have you ever questioned yourself? Have you ever really thought about who you really are and what you're here for? I guarantee you're not here to do that crap. So I invite you to really go to the website, really look at the forgiveness process. Just try it, you know, put the pen to the paper and watch what happens. You will be so much more alive, so much happier, and so much more delighted with life that you'll shock yourself if you do a little bit of work. You can also go to your app store on your phone and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, all one word, Heartland, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And when you do that, you'll be looking at, whether you're on an iPhone or on an Android phone, you'll be looking at the world's first forgiveness app, the only forgiveness app in the world that I know of. And you can actually step into doing the worksheet process that engages the mind in removing hostility and fear. And when you remove hostility and fear, what happens is you make space for active present love to appear in your mind. And that changes everything. When the truth of being shows up in the mind, everything is different. And so that's what we're here to support. That's what we're here to inspire. We appreciate you being here. Have a blessed day. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.